Let me look around. Have we got our speaker here tonight? Is he with us? At this time, I would love to introduce our speaker, Floyd, from Chula Vista. Okay. Love you.
Love you back. Yeah. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Floyd. I got about 3,000 notes here. I have a fan for anybody that's overheating. Okay. I asked Mary to start the meeting just a little bit early because tonight I'm not only going to speak. It is Memorial Day weekend, and I want to pay tribute to the veterans that gave everything, you know. There's a sign at Arlington that says, tell them that we gave all our today so you could have tomorrow, you know, and that's a fact. So, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I see you got a whole desk full of get well cards from the judge. It must have been a hell of a, what, St. Patrick's Day? Maybe. And I'm honored to be in a whole room full of defective characters tonight, so. Well, if you've been drinking, we got a whole room full of designated drivers. So. Yeah. I had a couple adult beverages before I came here tonight, so so I could be ready for this. It was two shots of Metamucil with an insurer. So. Well, let's get serious for a minute. As you can probably tell, I'm a Vietnam veteran. And I didn't fight in any other war but Vietnam, but I did three tours in Vietnam. And I lost a lot of friends. If you've never been to the Vietnam Memorial Wall, it's amazing experience. I want to give you a few facts about Vietnam. Just the wall itself has 58,267 names. That's more than World War I and II together. 39,996 were 22 years or younger. 8,283 were 18 years old. 19 years old, I'm sorry. And 33,103 were 18. 12 were 17 years old, and 5 enlisted at the age of 16. There's 3 sets of fathers and sons on that wall, 3 sets. 31 sets of parents lost 2 or more of their children in that war. 997 were killed on their first day in country. We have one sitting in the back there that was dead for 3 minutes. Bill? Bill saved somebody's life that day also. He was awarded the Silver Star, Purple Heart. So that's why he's my friend. That's why I sit with him all the time. I respect that man. I love his story. I love his poetry, if you're not on his poetry list. And it's amazing. So I'm going to give you a plug. But Bill's speaking at Easy Does It Speakers next Friday night out in Lemon Grove. So I invite you to come hear his story if you have not heard it. This one kills me. This one's personal. 1,448 were killed on their last day in country. They were going to go home tomorrow and never made it. There was 8 women on the wall. They were all nurses. And they didn't die. They didn't die for their family. They died for you and your family. They died for this country. They died for a flag that they believed in. And a constitution they believe in. They ain't never coming home. A bunch of them are buried, and nobody even knows their names but God. So, it's Memorial Day weekend. If you've lost somebody, you know how it feels. So, I think I'm going to stop at that. I will not talk about Vietnam tonight because it's a little bit too gruesome, and I respect people that it affects emotionally. So, I guess we're supposed to get this show on the road. It says what it used to be like, what happened to it, and what it's like now. Well, it didn't show up tonight, so you're stuck with Floyd. So, you notice they're pretty smart here at Pioneer. They pass that basket before I even get up to the microphone. No refunds, right? Okay. Hope we have a little bit of fun tonight. I hope I say something that affects you, if I have not already. I want to thank all of my friends. I have a bunch in this room tonight. And friends is the gift that we get along this journey. Because I had no friends before I walked into here. So, I'm supposed to do this. This is a warning. Floyd's story contains adult content, which may not be suitable for non-adults. So that means if you don't have an adult sense of humor, and if you don't like a little bit of bad sarcasm, or if your underwear get all twisted up real easy, like it's going to be a long hour and 5 minutes. Y'all ready? All right. They say that good stories start at the beginning or once upon a time. So let's start with once upon a time. It'll be 9 months prior to September 16th, 1945. My daddy didn't pull out on time, and here I am. An accident. This is called alcoholism. I had the ism way before I took my first drink, so that's where it started. If you do the math, that was September 16, 1945. That makes me almost 80, so my new drug of choice is two Viagra with a Cialis chaser. It works. Yeah, I was born September 16, 1945. I was named after my daddy. I'm a junior, Floyd Jr., and my father was my hero. Anybody that has not heard my story, my dad at the age of 16 walked out of a movie theater. Somebody pushed him from behind, and he knocked this little old lady down in front of him, and my daddy came up swinging. Now, what he did not know was this guy was this guy was with one of the mafia families, and the kid was 18 years old that my daddy just made a mockery of. And he was a Golden Glove state champion. And my daddy just whipped his ass. And now that kid's ego and pride would not let that go. Now, without permission, he had a hit put on my father. At the age of 16, my dad was shot point blank, double barrel shotgun. Buckshot. And I tell you buckshot because if he had been shot with birdshot, they'd have never got all the pellets out of him. He was 32 weeks on his deathbed. He's my Superman. He was given last rites 3 times. If you have all these pellets in you, they got to cut you, they got to x-ray you, find out where they are, cut you again, stitch you up. And, you know, he looked like Frankenstein from here to here. I can tell you, he had a 7th grade education, and he became a master machinist with the same company for 37 years. My daddy was a tough man. He was a hard man on us kids, but he taught us what we call mastery of life. And I remember what he told me, and I tell my sponsees this sometimes. You cannot master this in one day. You cannot master life in one day. You master today, and then when tomorrow comes, you master tomorrow. And that bode me well. You know, I was taught by my father, you respect your elders, you respect authority figures, and you don't question them. So my dad, for up to the age of 7, was home most of the time. And then at the age of 7, he started working out of town, and he was just never around, so my grandfather raised me. And the values and morals and the dignity and stuff that my dad instilled in me held up very well. But at the age of 7, I'm in second grade, I am an altar boy at Christ the King Church, and one of the deacons of the church approached me as I'm walking to school, and said, come with me. I don't question authority figures. And I went with him, and he took me up in the choir loft, and I was sexually abused for the first time. And I just say first time because it continued. And I never told. I never told my father because my father had killed him, and I wouldn't have had a dad. Moved out of that town, but the predators know where you are, and they know where their friends are. They let their friends know that you don't tell. So the abuse continued. I had a manager where I worked at a grocery market, and he was a child abuser and a scoutmaster. They're out there walking among us. And I never told. I stuffed that as far down as you can stuff it. I was taught never to cry. I was taught never to get my butt kicked. You know, whoever the school bully was, you go find him and you kick his ass. And let him know that that ain't going to happen. And that's just the way I was raised. So, at the age of 18, I was going to join the Air Force because my buddy came out here from back east, and he didn't want to get drafted, didn't want to be a Marine. If you look up Marine in the dictionary, it says lowest form of sea life. I didn't want to join the Army because I already knew how to count to 4. No offense, Bill. So we went to see the Air Force recruiter, and he was out to lunch. And the Navy recruiter wasn't, and the rest is history. And I enlisted up in San Jose, California, thinking I'm going to come down to sunny San Diego recruit center. And hell no. This was October, late October. Put us on a plane, sent us to Chicago. Freezing. They had a thing called the rabbit rule. If you enlisted on the East Coast, you got sent to the West Coast. And if you enlisted out here, you got sent back there. Because if you missed your mama, you had a long way to go. So we got all signed up, and I was graduating that year, and I was going to the senior prom. I was a year behind my buddy, and my dad bought me a whole bottle of Southern Comfort. That's my first drink. A whole bottle of Southern Comfort. And he said, it's like Kool-Aid, it won't hurt you. And it didn't hurt, yeah. Didn't hurt me while I drank it. But for the next 5 days, oh my God. And I did not like the effect. I was sick. I threw up everything but the family jewels for 5 days. Swear to God. And I said, I ain't never going to drink again. You know, a couple months later, I'm off the Great Lakes. Did my time in the Great Lakes, and luckily for me, they sent me here to San Diego. And my first ship was January 4th, 1964, here in San Diego. So I didn't drink. A lot of sailors drank, and I got picked on a lot because I did not drink. And I was a bosun mate in the United States Navy. And bosun mate is the guy that gets all the guys that are gangbangers or sent by the court or running from the law. You had to be pretty tough to deal with them. So I did what I had to do. I made rape pretty easy. I was not stupid. I was pretty intelligent, actually, and I got straight A's in high school until I ran into a guy that I had resentment against. I didn't even know what resentments were. And apparently he had one against me because he failed me for the year. So I studied hard, I made rate, and next thing I know, they're sending me to some place called Vietnam. That was 1965. I was 20 years old then. Still had not had a drink. And I think that's a key. And also what is key is the day I was molested. Remember that, because it's a key part of this story. I was molested in God's house. So I went to Vietnam, didn't have any mishaps the whole year I was there. I was running cargo off of merchant ships out of Da Nang Harbor almost the whole year. I was not in harm's way that much. And I came home and they put me on another ship. And then they decided to have what they call riverine forces over in Vietnam, PBRs. Was the boat that I ran. If you don't know what PBR is, Google Apocalypse Now, and it's that boat. It's a four-man crew, and we patrolled the Mekong Delta, we patrolled the Grand Canal, the French Canal, and the Long Canal. And we were in some hellhole places, and you never knew when the enemy was gonna hit you or how they were gonna hit you, and it was scary. And I did not drink or use drugs. Drugs is not part of my story. And I told my crew, you ever come back to this boat drunk or high, I'll shoot you my damn self, and I meant it. You are not getting me killed. The casualty rate for what I did in Vietnam was 3 out of 4 died. Think about that. 3 out of 4. I did a year in Vietnam. Admiral King flew down and asked me to do another year. Anybody that's sane would have said no. And I said, as long as you put a letter in my record, that as long as I stay in this man's Navy, I stay in San Diego. And he said, done. So I ended up doing 21 campaigns. That's a lot of campaigns in Vietnam. And I didn't get a scratch. None of my crew got a scratch, except one. One had 6 days left in country. He wanted to go into Saigon and get his teeth fixed before he came home. And we put him on a mail chopper. And that chopper got shot down on the way to Saigon. That was my heartbreak. That broke my heart. I survived all of that. I came home in middle of 1971. Some gal had been writing me letters the whole time I was there. She was just like a pen pal, but she wrote like she was one of them romance novelists. Them letters were hot. Steamy. And I said, wow, if she's anything like the way she writes, I'm gonna marry that gal. And I'll be damned if I didn't. And we had our first kid after 2 years, that would have been 73. Still did not drink. A lot of people know me alias-wise as Eddie Spaghetti from the Ducktail Review, which is a band that I put together when I came back. And how I got that band was I entered a talent contest with KSON. And I didn't expect to do shit. I didn't even give him my real name. That's how I got Eddie Spaghetti. Actually, I think I told him I was Eddie Funguzzi, and he said, I'll screw that up. So he called me Eddie Spaghetti, and I became Eddie Spaghetti, and I put a band together, and I think we opened the Country Bumpkin. Doris, you remember that place? Ah, P.O. Barb knows. Yeah, P.O. Barb knows a duck pond too. Friends in Low Places. That song was written about that bar. Times have changed, ain't they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Terrible. So I'm at the Country Bumpkin. This is in 1971. I still have not had that second drink. And one night, the waitress brought a little tray of drinks up to the stage. Little brandy sniffer looking glasses, and it was Grand Marnier. And I had one glass of Grand Marnier. Didn't even think about it. And the effect was totally different than that whole bottle of Southern Comfort. It was warm and fuzzy. Shit, I could dance better, sing better, look better. I went to the ladies' room and wrote nice shit about myself. But I was off and running. That was 1980. So from 71 to 80, I performed without drinking. But after that first drink, I wanted to experiment not only with drinks, but with other women. I would wake up naked. Where in the hell am I and who in the hell are you? And yeah, I remember before I got sober, I always said, I'm glad I always woke up with a woman. And after I've been sober a while, I said, shit, if I'd have woke up with a dude one time, I'd have gotten these rooms a hell of a lot quicker. A lot of people like my bad grandpa. Anybody see the movie Bad Grandpa? Robert? Yeah, that was my grandpa. And he babysat us. So he taught us about life and love and pursuit of happiness and all that stuff. And I remember the first thing he used to say was, women are the root of all evil. Immediately followed by, I'm going out and get me some roots tonight. Yeah. And he said, never let a woman break your heart. There'll be another woman along in 10 minutes, just like a bus. And it was true. It's true. He also said, run like hell if a girl can correctly spell gonorrhea. Yeah, and there was a couple other ones. We didn't have Beavis and Butthead back then. We had just Beavis and Asshole. So he liked that asshole word. And so he said, there's a lot of assholes in this world. Do not become their toilet paper. So that bode well for me. So that was part of the way I was brought up. I also was a bosun mate in the Navy, so I cussed a lot. I used the F word like it was air. And my sponsor told me I couldn't do that anymore when I got a sponsor, so that all had to change. If I got pissed off at somebody, I had to say some silly shit like, go forth and fornicate thyself. So anyway, I'm doing this band thing, and I'm getting a whole bunch of groupies, and I am cheating on my wife on a regular basis. Yeah, anybody cheat on their wife out there? Yeah. So much for an honest program. Yeah. Rigorously honest. Yeah. If that was true, if your girlfriend came down and said, hey, does this dress make me look fat? What are you going to say? Hell no, it makes you look marvelous. Yeah. Rigorous honesty, you'd have said, no, I think it's the refrigerator. So, you having fun yet?
Yeah.
All right. So let's get to this next thing. Next thing is, I'm cheating, I'm drinking, and the drinking progressed. This 1980, I started that with that second drink, one glass of Grand Marnier. Now I'm drinking every day Jack Daniels, Jim Beam, Jose Cuervo, and one of my favorites was Jameson's. But I like the whiskey. I don't know what you drank. Anybody come here because they drank too many Jello shots? No? No? A couple? All right. We have a men's meeting out in La Mesa. First thing we ask is, anybody here because they drank too many mimosas? And if they raised their hand, we gave them direction to a women's meeting. But I liked whiskey, and because it was quicker. You know, I didn't like beer. I tried that. If I was going to drink beer, it had to be a Budweiser. And I tried drinking like a woman one time, and it was Michelob. Couldn't do that. So anyway, in 1990, this is 10 years after that second drink. That second drink. 1990. I owned two houses, one off the 54, and another one off of 2nd and K Street. And I still married to that beautiful woman. She was a good woman. She was a good mother. And I had two beautiful kids. And one Saturday morning in 1990, I walked out of that house on 2nd and K Street. Had no idea where I was going that day. I was drunk on my butt. And I found a shopping cart. Found a shopping cart. And I liked it. And I chose to live out of that shopping cart the next 11 years of my life. Just like all them other poor souls you see out there. I had drank myself insane. I don't remember where I went that first day. I think I ended up in Encinitas. I think I was probably hitchhiking. I have no idea. Because I'm a blackout drinker. It amazes me when people say, I can't remember blacking out. Not remembering is a blackout. But I was a blackout drinker, you know. And so 11 years out there, I remember I was living in a storm drain off of Encinitas, and a flash flood came to wash me out to sea. I almost drowned my butt. I was wearing false teeth then and lost them too. And I'd go to that lifeguard tower every day. Hey, anybody turn any teeth? So somehow I ended up back down here in San Diego in 2001, early 2001. And by then I'm angry drunk. I'm an angry drunk. And I like to go to bars. And I'm homeless, I'm dirty, I got no teeth. And I'm going into bars hoping some woman could drink me attractive. Nobody can drink that damn much. And one night, I started a fight in one bar, ended up running into the same guys at another bar, and we got in a fight again. And whatever bar I went to, I was just raising way too much hell. They started 86 in me, and I wouldn't stay 86'd. So they got restraining orders. Anybody know Docs? Silver Dollar? Briar Patch? Mm-hmm. Manhattan for sure. There was one other, I can't remember. Maybe it was Singing Sinners or something. Or a Colony House, maybe. Because I hit them all. So I've got restraining orders, and I'm calling people up, and apparently I'm threatening to kill people. Now, I don't remember doing that. I do remember calling people and telling them if they didn't leave me alone or stay away from me or whatever, that they would get foobarred. That's a Vietnam term. I won't tell you what that means, but figured out F-U-B-A-R. Beyond all recognition. Yeah. So anyway, they decided to press charges, and May 2nd, 2001, I violated this restraining order at five different bars. apparently been threatening to kill people. They call them terrorist threats if you do that. He and I've been vandalizing people's cars and houses. I was out of control. And I got arrested. I walked in the Manhattan bar May 2nd, 2001, and I ordered my last drink. I didn't even get to drink the damn thing. That's why I can remember my last drink. Then police come in right behind me, put me in jail. Now remember, I've been gone for 11 years from my family. They hadn't got a card or a letter or a phone call. They didn't know if I was dead or alive. And I figured they pretty much didn't care either. That's the way I was thinking. So I get locked up down here in Chula Vista, this little Third Avenue jail down here, and I'll be damned. I'm sitting in jail, and the guards come and say, "You have a visitor." And who the hell knows I'm here besides the people that put me here? And it was my daughter. Daughter who hadn't got a card or a letter or a phone call from me for 11 years. And I said, "How did you find out I was here?" I like to talk about God shots. This is one of my first. She said, "You know the detective that booked you? I'm his babysitter." And he thought I had a right to know where you were, Dad. And she said, we've been looking for you. Me and my brother have been looking for you at every homeless camp in this town." And I figured they didn't care. And she said, "We have already forgiven you, Dad. You need to forgive yourself." Why she said that is because somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous, I won't break his anonymity, somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous went, sat down with my family and explained this disease to them. So, I'm in jail for 7 months and 20 days, and I'm detoxing. They don't serve you nothing in jail other than that homemade stuff. Pruno? Yeah. So I'm in jail. I'm 56 years old. I'm in a car called the Hood, Woods. 56 years old, I had no idea it was a wood. Never heard of that. So I'm there 7 months and 20 days, and they're going to let me out Christmas Eve. And Christmas Eve, they opened them gates, and my son, who hadn't got a card or a letter or a phone call from his dad, who had also looked for me with his sister, was there to pick me up. And he brought a six-pack of Budweiser and a carton of cigarettes. Now, that judge said, "If I see you again, you're going to go to prison for 5 years. And I want you to know that 7 months and 20 days of losing my freedom got my attention. It's a pretty good motivator." So my son took me to my former wife's house, who, by all rights, should never have to speak to me again. And it's Christmas Eve, and I got no gifts. I'm dirty. I got no clean clothes, and I'm feeling like drinking. I'm feeling guilt, and I'm feeling shame, and I'm feeling remorse and hurt and hate. Not at anybody but myself. I hated myself at that point. And my ex-wife, who hadn't said shit all night, she's in that master bedroom with her new boyfriend, and they are just hooping it up in there like a Herbal Essence commercial. "Ooh, ah, oh, oh, Daddy." Yeah, and I was about one old daddy from going out and getting drunk, I'll tell you that right now. And my daughter saw the look on my face, and she said, "Dad, come home with me. You can stay on the couch, but I want you to get to know these grandkids that I didn't even know existed." She had two babies of her own that I didn't even know existed. And I went. Because if I didn't go over there that night, I'd still be out there drunk today. I know that. But she put a condition on me staying at that house, in that sleeping on that couch. I had to go to AA. So not the judge. The judge didn't send us me to AA. He told me don't drink, don't go anywhere that serves alcohol. If all I had to do was not drink when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, this would have been an easy thing. But that's not all I had to do. I was on 5 years formal probation. I had restraining orders still, and even more. I had financial problems. I had anger problems. I had to go to anger management. I never got a 502, and they made me go to Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. That pissed me off. I wanted to ask them to send me to DAM, Drunks Against Mad Mothers. Anyway, I'm doing all this stuff, and I go to my first AA meeting. It was at the Top of the Hill group on 3rd and Moss Street. I got some Top of the Hill family here tonight, do I not? Yeah. I got some Coronado Alano Club family here tonight, do I not? Yeah. I got some Rainbow Group people here tonight, do I not? Yeah. Thank you for bringing her. And I've got my Pioneer family, because this is hallowed ground for me. Because at that first meeting that I went to, I heard the message of hope. H-O-P-E. Helping other people escape this disease. We drank to escape, and we became prisoners of the thing that took us out of our reality. Me anyway. I drank to, I didn't have to feel and deal. All that stuff my daddy taught me that I could do it and stuff it down, I couldn't do it anymore. But alcohol, I didn't need to stuff it no more. I just drank enough to make it go away, even if it was temporary. So now I'm out of jail. I go to this meeting, this hope meeting, I call it, you know, H-O-P-E. Hearing other people's experiences is another acronym for that. But my favorite one was having our problems erased. I had a bunch of problems, and I had no way to solve them. None. My first meeting, they told me about this place right here, this sacred ground. This is a hallowed ground, South Bay Pioneers. And I called here, and they had no beds open. Next day, my daughter called here and gave my, what do you mean you have no beds open? And Frank Brown, who's not with us anymore, he's at that big meeting up in the sky. Frank Brown told my daughter, said, somebody that didn't want this gift, this God-given gift, went out and got drunk last night. Send your dad down here. God shot. Yeah. So I'm on probation. I come to South Bay Pioneers. They read me these rules. I'm not a big rule follower. I had 20 years in the Navy. I had 13 captain's mess and one court martial. None of them were alcohol related, all defects of character related. I did not like following the rules. I didn't like being compliant, you know, and that was part of my defects of character. I didn't know none of that stuff. It was all Greek to me. But I came here that next day, and I'll be damned. They make me go to this noon meeting here, and this newcomer, an old black guy named Henry, newcomer, hadn't been sober but about 4 days. And he stood at this podium, and he said, you know, if I don't drink today, I got a chance of not drinking tomorrow. And I said, wow. Wow, let me just try that. And I did. One day at a time, I just did not drink today. And I'd like to tell you that everything, all them problems I was facing, they weren't going away overnight. I had to go to therapy for a year. Therapy, forensic therapist, because they wanted to know if those threats that I was making could become a reality. And it would just talk. You know, I can't tell you how many times I let my tongue get my teeth knocked out. You know, way too many. So anyway, I come to South Bay Pioneers, and I did everything they asked me to do in this house. If you were here early, I came in here. I walked through that door with a half a trash bag of dirty clothes and two pair of underwear. One of them was a pink thong, and I became Pink Floyd that night. And Maurice, one of my roommates up there, Maurice, goes, "No, hell no, hell no." And he went down to Target. We had a Target back then. We had a bar at the bottom of the hill, too, called Ronnie's Dew Drop In. And if you had a 30-day token, they'd give you a free pitcher of beer, bastards. Took a lot of guys out, that Dew Drop In. But anyway, he went down and bought me about two packs of Tidy Whiteys, and I was good to go. So when I walked into that first AA meeting, you know what I had to wear? I had a motorcycle jacket. I had a straw fedora. I had Daisy Dukes and cowboy boots. And I'm walking in with my good-looking daughter, and they think I'm just some old creep hitting on some newcomer. So anyway, they asked me to tell my story, and I gave it to them briefly. And I remember Jim and Caroline Woolway walked up to me at the end of that meeting, and they said, "Floyd, we don't care where you've been, and we don't care what you've done. We care about where you're going and what you're going to do with your life, you know." And that meant something to me, because nobody cared about me for a long time. And I did my time here as a resident. I had a Navy retirement, half of a Navy retirement, because she still gets the other half even now. And she'll probably never remarry or die, so that money's gone. So anyway, I came here. I made a lot of good friends. I did my time. And I remember our first Halloween. Two of the gals on the board of directors had overheard my sponsor say something about I was too damn macho and I needed to get in touch with my feminine side. So they said, "Floyd, we're going to take you Halloween shopping." And they took me to like one thrift store, and they found all these frilly ladies' things and this leather mini skirt. And I mean mini, it was more like a duck skirt. You could see my quack. Can't help myself. Anyway, I went and bought a blonde wig, and I came here as what, Barb?
Flo.
Flo the hoe. Flo the hoe. I had this red dress, I had this feather boa, and I had condoms pinned all over my dress. And I had this little stupid ass sign that said, "Flo, to protect and serve." Mostly protect. I wanted to go out and buy a condom company. I was gonna call it. Never mind. No kidding. So anyway, I do this flow thing, and I end up winning first place that time. And I had these like water balloon boobs, and I could jiggle them, and they would just flap. And it was hilarious. And I remember Tom was the director back then, and Tom came up and gave me a kiss on the cheek. He was dressed as a hippie that night, and somebody got a good photo of that. And Tom said, "Next year, I'm going to come as your pimp." And he did. So we had a lot of fun. Dan said I couldn't. I liked my sponsor now, Dan Duffy. And Dan said, do not bring them photos. But my friend Matt back there said he wasn't coming unless I had a photo. So, Matt, that's your photo now. You can do whatever you want with it. I can't take any blame. I'm compliant. So, Dan will be proud of me, right, Mary? Yeah, okay. So now I'm in recovery, my first phase of recovery. They told me, I know I can pay rent, but they said probably be a good idea if you get a job. My sponsor said, not only get a job, you need to get a driver's license. I didn't have a car. I'm going, what the hell do I need a driver's license for? You know? But he made me get a driver's license. And right next door at the senior complex, which a lot of you live in, I would go down there every day, not every week, every day. Got any job openings? Nope. Got any job openings? Yeah. Day after day after day. And one day I went down there, and they said, yep. it was a job for head of maintenance. And they said, we have to take applications for 10 days. Another God shot. Got to take applications for 10 days, and then we'll do interviews. So I went down there for the interview, and I was the only one that showed up. And they hired me. They gave me a couple tests on safety and general knowledge of maintenance and electricity and plumbing, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I've got this job. I'm living right next door. I get asked to be on the board of directors here. And I get on the board of directors. And at the end of that year, the manager had just gave us notice. And that's when we hired Tom Cabell. And Tom couldn't find an assistant manager that wanted to live on property. So I said, oh, hell, I'll do it. And so I moved out of there and I moved back here. So I've been of service to this house. And I was assistant manager here, I think, almost 16 years. So I love giving back to this house. This place is sacred ground. You guys in the house, you got it made. You have a chance, you know. Your past is not your reality. It's not who you are. It does not define you, you know. The life ahead of you is much greater than that life you left behind. And you could make it even greater yourself. So I like the fact that I got a sponsor. His name was Wayne. He was a gunny sergeant in the Marine Corps, and I needed somebody tough that wasn't going to co-sign my BS. And he took me through the steps, and he did it back to basic style. Steps 1, 2, 3, get started on 4, and so on and so forth. And we were done with the steps, I think, in about 4 months. And I remember on step 4, he said, is this all you got? And I said, what do you mean? He goes, yeah, I want you to go way back. Because I thought that resentment list was for people that I wanted to see on the obituary list. Because my resentments ran deep and long. And he said, no, go back to your earliest memory. My first memory was my mom was showing pictures to all her bridge club friends of me naked and pointing out Mr. Toodles. She had a nickname for my ding-a-ling. Mr. Toodles. I wanted something more Charles Bronson like Mr. Majestic. Mr. Magnificent. So that was my first. That was my first resentment that I could go back to, and then I got I got the idea. Okay. So I did all of that, and I've got a bunch of sponsors in here tonight. They've all gone through the steps except one, maybe I think is on step 8 or 9, and. I sponsor a lot of guys. I am a fisherman of men, like the book says. I go out and look for guys. I got 3 new phone numbers yesterday and today. You have to give this away. Red Hot Chili Peppers have a song that designed for sponsorship. Give it away, give it away, give it away now. And that's what we do. Got to give it away. I love working with newcomers. Godshot. One day after my birthday this last year, on September 17th, a car came through my house at 90 miles an hour at 3:30 in the morning. My birthday was on the 16th, and I had been up to Brona Casino on their dime, and I had borrowed Lenny's car. And I brought it back to Lenny because he needed it the next day. And Lenny said, I'll just drive you home. Lenny drove me home that night. And I went in and turned on the TV because I hadn't watched the news in a couple of days. And I fell asleep on the couch. So instead of being in my bed, and I'm always in my bed at 3:30 in the morning, I was still on the couch when that car hit. And that car, 90 miles an hour, burned rubber. Well, from here to the end of that parking lot almost. Hit a brick wall, and all the bricks in the wall became bullets. They went through my roof. They went through all parts of my house. They went through my shed. One of them went through a bucket, a through and through on a bucket, plastic bucket. It was unbelievable. My neighbor's cars looked like Bonnie and Clyde's car at the end of the movie, like Swiss cheese. And that lady either had a stroke or a seizure. They don't know. She ended up crippled for life. She survived that crash. But she'll never walk again. She broke her back, broke her spine. She don't know what happened. But that was God looking out for me. You know, I did not have a God when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I looked up there, I'm going, I'm pretty much hopeless. And that Maurice guy that I was talking about, I was up in this blue room up here, and Maurice was my roommate. And he was on his knees and praying every night, every morning. And one day I said, hey, Mo, who the hell are you praying to? And he turned around and looked at me and said, I'm praying to my God, Floyd. You can borrow him till you find your own. Because up to this point, that point, I had no God. I gave up on God in second grade when I was 7 years old. And that God never gave up on me. You know, that 10th promise or 12th promise, God's doing for me what I could not do for myself. That's it. I didn't come here. I had no intention of getting sober. I had no desire to get sober. I desired to stay the hell out of prison. I didn't know what AA was or what AA did. And I realized today I had four gods that I didn't even know I had when I got here. Gift of desperation. That's one God. I had a group of drunks. That's two gods. Y'all gave me good orderly direction. That's three. And my favorite God is I get one day. I get one day. And I didn't have to do nothing but suit up and show up and have faith. When we read how it works, them last two lines said, no human power can relieve my alcoholism. I don't give a shit if Bill Wilson's your sponsor. God could and would if he were sought. I got a young man that's going to get a year tomorrow, bought me these, in the military we call them dog tags. And just turn that around, it's God tags. I wear these God tags, and one of the God tags says, get to sotting. You know, If I don't ask God to help me stay sober every day, I will not be complacent. I will not stop going to meetings. I will not stop doing what I do to stay sober. God brought me to this house of drunks, because of what happened in his house when I was 7 years old. God walked me through 3 tours of Vietnam. God walked me through 11 years of being out there on that street, which is a dangerous place to be. God gave me strength and courage to come here and do what you do, the same way you did it. God brought me here and gave me to you, because without you, there is no me. People ask me what I think Alcoholics Anonymous is. I always have to tell this story. A man's down in his workshop, and he's working on this little project. And this little boy comes down, and he wants to play catch. And the dad wants to finish his project. So the dad gives the little boy a puzzle. And he said, go put this puzzle together, and then we can play catch. Now the dad's thinking is, the little boy has no idea what the world looks like, and this is a puzzle of the world. A little while later, the boy comes back, and he's got the puzzle put together. And the dad goes, my God, how did you do that? You have no idea what the world looks like. And the little boy said, I know, Dad. The other side of the puzzle was a picture of a man. And I know what a man looks like. And when I put that man back together, the whole world fell into place. We are broken people, like thousands of people, pieces of a puzzle when we come here. Men and women, broken women, men and women. And what AA is, broken men and women, fixing other broken men and women. That's what AA is, and that's what AA does. I'm glad you let me start early tonight so I can do the rest of this. I tell you all the time that this house is sacred ground to me. I remember every old-timer from the time I walked in the doors here. And I want to pay tribute to them on this Memorial Day, because if you don't say their names, they are not remembered. So, if you know these folks, fine. If you don't know these folks, they know you. Let's start with some of the old-timers that were on the board of directors when I got here. Let's start with Leo Kelly. If you know these people, say amen. 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 Yeah. How about Buzz Sawyer? Amen. Yeah. Dave Stevens. Amen. Bill Winters. Amen. Gene Clabo. Amen. Motorcycle Don and Motorcycle Larry. Amen. Got a lot of amens out of that. How about my friend Bruce Gordon, Commander Bruce Gordon? He was at the noon meeting every day. Oh, I like this one. How about Robert Torres? Robert T. Wait a second. Wait a second. Robert T. Yeah. How about anybody remember Little Pete?
Yes.
Little Pete had 13 DUIs. Yeah. And the judge said, what the hell are you doing driving? He said, I was too drunk to walk. We had this other little Navy chief. He called himself Big Mac. He was about 4 foot nothing, but he called himself Big Mac. And on his birthdays, he always brought lumpia, so nobody missed his birthday. Ah. Little Mac. Just a little Mac, a little Filipino Navy chief. Yeah. And we have a plaque for this guy, Lou Scallet. Yeah. Well, Lou Scallet was a fisherman of men. He sat right there where you are, David. And if a newcomer walked through that door, he snatched onto him. He was a fisherman of men, a good man. Yeah. Behind the wall, Bob. Big Tony. Yeah. Rufus.
Yeah.
Amen. Butcher Dick.
Yeah.
All right. Jewel Johnson.
Yeah.
Whole bunch of amens there. One of my favorites, Carl Parker.
Yeah.
Fred Gibson.
Yeah.
And his Fred Gibson. One-eyed Willie. Double amen on that one. Ken Burns. Archie and Andrew. Amen. Two big parts of the Top of the Hill group. Those guys. One of my favorite, Jim Murphy. And a guy that had 62 years sober when he died, John Rogers.
Yeah.
My late sponsor, Wayne Hastings. Great ladies of this facility right here. Awful nice Orpha. Moselle Gibson.
Yeah.
She was a Patty Clavel. Sister
Virginia.
Virginia, amen. And then we had the Scottish clan here, and Lillian.
Amen.
Hey, Lillian, yeah. And one of my favorites was little Lucy Bunker. That gal made cookies at every meeting, homemade. And she was something else. And our friend that we just lost recently, June Houston.
Amen.
Yeah. Paulette.
Amen.
Oh, Jerry Page. Oh, Jesus, she scared me to death. She sponsored a lot of women, and she thought I was trying to 13th step them, and she said, if you don't stay away from them, you're going to be missing a body part. And I think Lucy called me, what did she call me? A walking hormone? Yeah. So, yeah. Some couples. Jim and Caroline, which I mentioned earlier. John and Ruthie. Roy and Marge. Mac and Maria McDermott. Yeah. Chuck and Mary Perry. And there's a couple of residents from this house that I am never going to forget. One named Gerald. Yeah. One named Josh. The most important one for me was a little old lady named Charmaine. Charmaine was just a sweet person with a big heart. She had a house about a quarter of a mile from where I live right now, and I put some sweat and blood into that house when we were trying to make it ready for her to bring people, ladies, in off the street. You might notice we're trying to raise money to build a new house called Charm's House, because that's what we called it. We just called her Charm. One night she took a gal in off the street, and that gal killed her in the middle of the night and stole everything she had. Her family knew that she loved South Bay Pioneers. They donated that house to us. Chris knows more about it than I do, but we put that money in a trust. We looked for some property to open a house in her name, and our board of directors and Chris especially decided to, let's build that house right here on this property. Charm's House. Now, I don't like to brag too much, but that's important to me. I have a personal investment not only that house, but what it's going to stand for, and what it's going to do for women that can't find a place to go. My Sunday morning group, which I like to brag about, my Sunday morning group meets once a week, 9:30, and I can tell you that we have donated, as of tomorrow morning, $1,500. That's not a lot of people. Maybe 25, 30 people come to that meeting. But their heart is as big as mine. I think this thing's just got to get done. And I'm just an emotional wreck right now. I am humbled and honored that you all came out here tonight. I hope I said something that touched you. Could it touch me? Just saying it. My friend Roger told me, I think 2 years sober, Roger said, "Floyd, you're a good man." And nobody had called me a good man in a long time. So, thanks for being here tonight. If nobody told you that you were loved today, God wanted me to be first.
Thank you, Floyd. Another hand for Floyd, please. Yeah.